I have grown weary of late in reading, mostly on Facebook, about all of the people across the lower 48 who are in anguish about the cold temperatures and the snow their states have been receiving. I think a part of that weariness, certainly, is coupled with the fact that we've largely been lacking those same two things here. Conditions are far too warm, and it's a bit concerning, now that we're into the month of January. A good solid winter is vital to proper travel conditions that allow us to move between communities, hunt, and simply get out and have fun. I actually fielded questions about this very thing, our winter weather conditions and travel, this week in the form of two letters of inquiry from a couple of people who wrote to us. Actual, written-out mailed letters. Yes, people still do that from time to time. From the lower 48, one from Minnesota and the other from Florida. So I had the opportunity to share about what winter and travel are normally like, even if we're not quite there yet this year. While I know that there's more to do on the snow than just use a snow machine, such as cross-country ski, go snowboarding, and snowshoeing, I just got new bindings for mine in the mail this week. What people irrefutably do the most is get out on their snow machines. I know I'm certainly looking forward to some quality time on mine. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I may have shared this on here before, but even though I've spent most of my adult life in Alaska, I've never completely lost the childlike feeling of giddiness over being able to use ATVs and snow machines. It brings a smile to my face that I get to use them to travel and get out and hunt and do other things. As a teacher in the village of Non-Dalton in the 90s, I totally savored the morning ride to school on my four-wheeler and the ride back home at the end of each day. My perspective for this is that traveling in these ways is not something that you can do in my home state of Kansas. So I've experienced both, and being able to travel on ATVs and snow machines is the much more fun way to go. And beyond the fun, they certainly make some things possible that would otherwise be a lot more difficult to do. With that in mind, let's talk a bit about those snow goes we love and depend on. I do think it's funny how one of the indicators that someone might be new to Alaska is when you hear them say, snowmobile, that being the word that folks in the lower 48 would most commonly use. Whenever I hear someone say snowmobile, it's not uncommon that I ask how long they've been in town. For most of us, it's snow machine, snow go, or sled. I'd argue that the invention of the snow machine was a pretty big thing for Alaska, even if it didn't start off in Alaska. With some inventions in history, it's been easy to point to a single individual who's largely been given credit for the invention, such as with Thomas Edison in the incandescent light bulb or the Wright brothers in the airplane. With the snow machine, it's not quite as clear-cut as that. Its origin is not so much the work of any one single inventor, but was more a process of advances from several individuals to find a way to propel vehicles over the snow by way of, ultimately, the gas-powered internal combustion engine. One of the very first efforts at moving a vehicle over the snow was the Lombard Steam Log Hauler, patented and built by Alvin Lombard of Maine in 1901. While a track and skis were a part of the design, this machine looked nothing like anything we'd see today. In fact, it was basically a steam locomotive with tracks around the wheels and skis mounted to the front. Sleds pulled behind the machine were loaded with logs, which were then able to be pulled to mills in larger quantities in the winter. Lombard's machine required a crew of four to operate. His company went out of business after producing 83 machines. One still survives all these years later and was fully restored, and it can be seen at a museum in Maine. Elsewhere, the folks of Wisconsin have been credited with doing a lot early on to make snow travel happen. Wisconsinites fiddled with vehicles in many forms designed to travel over the snow during the early 1900s. Designs ranged from modified bicycles on runners to Model T Fords converted to tractor treads and skis. A race near Three Lakes in 1926 had 104 entries of these converted cars. Also, many modified Ford Model Ts were popular for rural mail delivery during the winters. Still, a modified Model T is a long way from what we have now. The first United States patent for a snow vehicle using front skis and a rear track was issued to Ray Muscott of Waters, Michigan, on June 27, 1916. I wasn't able to dig up anything else about Mr. Muscat or any success he might have had with his design. It's possible that the lack of information is in itself an answer to that question, that it just didn't get very far beyond the patent stage. One name that is mentioned prominently in the advancement of snow machine design is Carl Eliason of Saner, Wisconsin. Eliason developed something of a prototype for modern snow machines in 1924 when he mounted a small gas-powered boat motor to a long toboggan. It had a rudimentary form of steering attached to the bottom side of the front of the toboggan, and it was driven by a single rear track. Eliason patented his idea in 1927, producing 40 snow machines of this design in fairly short order after the patent went through. Eliason called his machine a motor toboggan. His initial design looked like a long toboggan with a weightlifter's bench on top. That was the seat for the driver. It had an engine, track, the skis, and a small windshield in front of the seat. It motored along atop the snow at an adrenaline-pumping 2.5 miles per hour. That might sound a bit slow by today's standards, but, frankly, having trudged through snow on foot, that still sounds like outrageous progress to me. The motor toboggan was a big hit, and orders came in quicker than Eliason could produce machines to fill them. He sold his patent to a larger company, which manufactured them, for the military for a time, before transferring the patent to a company in Canada. The Canadian company, in the 1950s, modified the design and produced the K-12, which much more closely resembled a modern snow machine in looks. The K-12 had a cowling and windshield, and became the design other manufacturers would seek to recreate in the years that followed. If you get a chance, Google up some images of it sometime. It's worth the few seconds you'd use doing that. Another notable name in the history of the snow machine is Joseph Armand Bombardier of Quebec, Canada. Bombardier invented a different type of caterpillar track system that was suitable for all kinds of snow conditions. His company used his new track design in the production of large, enclosed, multi-passenger snow machines. His machines were used across Canada and were used for applications such as ambulances, postal vehicles, winter school buses, forestry machines, and army vehicles during World War II. In spite of the success of his company and its vehicles, Mr. Bombardier had always nurtured dreams of a smaller, personal-sized snow vehicle. Finally, in 1959, with the development of lighter, smaller engines, he was able to follow through on his dreams and came up with what we know as the modern snow machine. He began producing machines with an open cockpit in one- or two-person designs and sold them under the name Skidoo. As happens when someone has a design that's successful, competitors began to spring up who tried to copy and improve upon his design. By the 1970s, there were over 100 different snow machine manufacturers, most of whom were small fleeting efforts that went out of business quickly. In some ways, the snow machines of the late 50s and early 60s started to look like something like the ones we drive today, if a lot more boxy in shape. To my mind, it's not unlike the comparison of appearances between cars and trucks of the 1970s and the SUV hybrid things we drive today. Essentially the same design, but with very noticeable cosmetic differences. It makes you wonder what men like Eliason and Bombardier would think of the looks and performance of today's snow machines. Probably they'd be pretty tickled, as perhaps what we have today is kind of what they had in mind all along, but for the technological limitations of their day. On the subject of looks, beauty is very much in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? I say that because the lines and stylings typical of new snow machines today, well, that's not really the look I favor. Though, I've no doubt I'm solidly in the minority on that. I'm not one to give up on an item that works, and I often favor the looks of older items. My current ride, and by current I mean it's what I've had since 2006, is a 1994 Arctic Cat Panther Deluxe. Frankly, those early to mid-90s machines are the ones that I think look stylish, and if and when I ever get a new-to-me machine, it'll likely be something from that time frame, not something you'd see on a showroom floor today. Irrespective of snow machines and their appearances, and just what look everyone favors, here's a couple of thoughts. First, let's be hoping for a real winter to be able to get out on our snow machines, or, if it's more your thing, skis, snowboards, or snowshoes. Second, if you get a chance, raise a cup of coffee, tea, or hot chocolate to the memory of guys like Eliason and Bombardier. and how their innovation and efforts paved the way to make our lives easier and a lot more fun today. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.